Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 29th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
I know you're basking in the afterglow of our Clubhouse event. It was our first ever event over on the Clubhouse app where we talked to MBA admissions. How did you think that went?
Well, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. You know, like you say, this is the first time we've done this. So I felt at the beginning, maybe we were a bit stilted in our conversation, a little bit too deliberate maybe in terms of how we talk about stuff. But then we loosened up a little bit. That was very good. And got some folks from the audience to join us on stage to create more conversation and stuff. So, yeah, quite frankly, I really enjoyed it. And I think as a first effort, it went quite well, Graham.
All right, so you're giving us an A grade.
I always give myself an A grade, Graham.
Yeah, of course.
If I don't, no one else will, right?
But, you know, last week, as if, you know, starting our own Clubhouse club and you know, doing our first event over there wasn't enough, last week was busy. I mean, we had admissions decisions coming right and left. Wharton and Kellogg were two of the big names, but there were others too. Do you want to give a quick recap? And I also believe, if memory serves, that there are a couple of really big decisions coming this week too for round two.
Yeah. I mean, we are in the very thick of decision weeks, the busiest time of the season on our website for sure, on Livewire. So last week, Kellogg, Haas, Anderson, several other programs releasing their decisions. Of course, Wharton. And Wharton changed their process a little bit this season for round two, which I thought was very smart on their part, releasing all the decisions at the same time. Very busy last week. This week, we've got the two big gorillas, as it were, releasing their decision. So all the excitement that you had last week, very good. But if you've got your applications and, you know, if you did the interviews at Harvard or Stanford, you're still waiting for that big decision. So best of luck to folks in that boat. And there are other schools this week too, Sloan being another big hitter. Really interesting, exciting couple of weeks, I think, Graham.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know people are, it's stressful. And you mentioned Wharton decided not to call people this year or to first release decisions and then call, which is the way HBS does it. And I think that lessened some of the stress there.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, last week was just nuts with, you know, what was it, Haas and you know, UT Austin and UCLA, all these decisions flowing out. So lots of activity. We're almost there. People will have a real clear sense of their future in the coming days. Although, as we've seen, there are a lot of waitlisters out there too, and that's always a tough spot to be in. We actually spent quite a bit of time on Clubhouse talking about waitlist stuff, so I'll spare everyone here. But yeah, there's just a lot going on. And I did want to mention, we have another Clubhouse event coming up. I'm going to try to make it. I have like a conflict, but I'm going to try to make it. But I think it's, is it this Thursday? And it's going to be at 11 a.m. Eastern. Is that right, Alex?
Yes. No, that's the plan. I hope you can make it, Graham, because if you don't make it, I'm going to need to find another co-host. Because I've one thing I learned from hosting our session yesterday, Graham, is you need at least two folks to have a conversation. You can't really talk to yourself.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can, but sometimes you end up, you know, in the hospital or something, right? So, that's a good point. It's easier for sure. I did want to share one thing with you. I got an email that came in last week from someone right after Wharton announced. I get this email and it says, "Dear Graham, I just wanted to let you know that I got into Wharton Lauder with a full ride, despite a rather mediocre GRE. I was featured on episode 119 of your Wiretaps, and I was the first applicant featured in that episode with a very different list of schools to the one that I ultimately applied to. But still, I've been listening to your podcast for many months now and use the website both to immerse in the community and to take advantage of the fantastic resources you have on there. And it has been beneficial in the process. Please continue to do the amazing job you do. Best regards," and I'll leave his name out, but it's a gentleman who got into Wharton Lauder, you know, and just is over the moon about that. So I just thought I would share that, Alex, because he wrote to me, but obviously he's been listening to both of us give advice, and so I just wanted to share that with you.
Did you go check the Wiretaps recording to see what advice we actually gave them?
I was afraid to. I figured I would just, because maybe we said, this guy's never getting into Wharton, you know? but I don't know. I have to go back and listen. That's a really good point. Hopefully we didn't dissuade him. I think at the time, we also, he had a question about whether he should be retaking the test or not. And I remember we talked a little bit about how, you know what, prep for your interviews. It's a little late to kind of throw in a test, and what are the chances you're going to improve it at the 11th hour? So I think that was smart because he got in with a lower score anyway.
What fantastic advice we must give.
Yes, yes. So, if anyone else wants to reach out and share stories of triumph with us, they can send emails to info@clearadmit.com. Just use the subject line wiretaps so that Alex and I will see it. But yeah, we love hearing about this. I mean, especially it's so cool to hear from people who were featured on the show and then go on to get results. So yeah. And actually, Lauren on our team was saying we should, for the 100th episode of Wiretaps, which I think is coming up here, we're at number 90 or so, that we should like get a bunch of people who were featured on Wiretaps and who have since gotten their decisions. And, you know, who want to talk about that. So that could be cool. We'll see if we can make it happen.
I have a question for you, Graham.
Okay.
Because I just realized, as you reading that out, we actually have a question from a community member.
Okay.
Did you see it, or shall I read it out to you and you can cold turkey answer it?
You should read it, because once again, I didn't see it. So I'm happy to. Yeah, I know. Well,
here we go then. Now with all my school decisions out, I was wondering if you guys could weigh in. I got into Chicago's Masters of Analytics with a 5,000 scholarship, Columbia's Masters of Applied Analytics, and Columbia's Masters of Business Analytics, a joint venture with their engineering and business schools. I also got into Carnegie Mellon's MBA program with a 50,000 scholarship.
Wow.
What kind of considerations do you guys recommend I take whilst considering these choices? I'm happy to jump. Well, said they're happy to jump on the call. That's obviously not going to happen in this case. But So how would you balance those types of options, Graham?
Well, it's really sort of night and day in terms of like they're just different animals. The specialized masters in data analytics or business analytics versus an MBA offering. I think we've interacted with this community member before, and so I should recall more about his background, but. To me, this all comes down to like, what's the likely outcome for this candidate in the long term? Like, where do they want to be? Because I still think that an MBA from Tepper with 50 grand, which is not, that's a good amount of money, could be really helpful in pivoting and doing all kinds of new things, right, with one's career. It certainly would keep the doors sort of wider open in terms of what one might be able to do. Obviously, though, if this person knows, like, hey, I'm all about data analytics, business analytics, and I'm just going to go totally down that rabbit hole, and for the rest of my career, that's what I want to do, then, obviously some of these other masters might make sense. And it's not lost on me that, a master's from Columbia or Chicago may have a little more, if in terms of the parent university, may carry a little more weight than Carnegie Mellon. Although, their MBA program is pretty fantastic. I mean, many would argue it's kind of top 16, maybe top 18 or something, but it's right there. To me, it comes down to what does this person want to do? And not just short term, but over the long haul. So I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a great way to not answer the question, Graham. I love the way you did that. But yeah, I mean, it's super challenging. The interesting thing about, the balance between specialized masters and MBA, I mean, we can talk more broadly about that. The MBA offers more opportunity. There's probably a better recruiting process attached to it. So on a career management side, networking, lifetime networking, and so on and so forth attached to the MBA. What's interesting in this particular case is the master's degree programs that we're talking about are going to be extremely sought after. Like folks going through those programs, companies are going to eat them up because we need better data scientists, better data analytics. All marketing decisions are data driven these days. I mean, and I'm a marketing guy. I assume in operations management and various other things, data, it's data. So I can see the real draw to these specialized analytics programs. But if I was this candidate, I would think long term, like what options, opportunities with the MBA in the long run might be available for someone with a bit more flexibility, a bit more sort of, you know, looking at sort of the CEO, CFO, CMO, COO sort of situation. And sort of consider it from that perspective in terms of the long run. I had another point and I completely forgot it as I was rattling on like that, Graham. But I mean, it's a really interesting dilemma because, again, yeah. And we said this before on the podcast, maybe a couple of years ago, the MBA was clearly getting more threatened by these specialized master's programs. Mm-hmm. But certainly over the last year or two, the COVID-19 pandemic has just completely changed the landscape. And for whatever reasons, now the demand for the MBA, certainly at top schools, has ratcheted up significantly.
And I would add one more thing, which is I wonder to what extent this candidate could tailor his MBA experience around really quantitative...
That was my other point.
I knew it.
This guy... potentially think you're going to Tepper. I mean, yeah. Tepper, Carnegie Mellon, that's an engineering. If I associate that brand with anything, it's going to be numbers and so on and so forth. So, you know, in your second year in your electives or whatever, you could probably take the type of coursework you're going to be taking in these sort of one-year master's type programs. I would think, Graham, anyway.
Yeah, there's going to be some electives that this person could avail themselves of, for sure. I have a couple more things before we get into the wiretaps portion of the episode where we review our candidates for this week. But the first one is that we're actually doing some research. Alex Kelly on our team is our research guru. And so she's running a research project where she's trying to find some MBA applicants who might want to actually get on the phone with her and talk about the research process and how they kind of went about, you know, deciding where to apply and stuff. And so if you're interested in that, you can go to bit.ly/CA research interest, all lowercase. And just head over there. I believe that if you're selected, there's even like a gift card for participating in the interview. So check that out. There's also a post on our website about it. The other big thing, Alex, I don't know if you've been following this, but we have this March Madness tournament running over on the website where we started with a bracket of 32 post-MBA employers, you know, the Bains, the Googles, you know, the companies that our registered users most often express interest in joining post-MBA. And I wanted to share some of the results because we are now down to, we're down to just, eight companies because, you know, we had a lot of really interesting head-to-head. So McKinsey beat Microsoft by a margin of 58-41. So they've moved on and they're going to be facing Facebook in this kind of Elite Eight round. And Facebook just barely eked out, I mean, literally by tenths of a percentage, eked out Goldman Sachs. So McKinsey versus Facebook is one of the matchups. We've also got Amazon going up against Google. Both of those companies fairly handily won their brackets, Amazon beating Morgan Stanley and Google trouncing Nike. Then in the final four schools left in this Elite Eight round, we've got Bain going up against Apple. And I said schools, but I meant companies. So Bain is going to face Apple. And then we've got Barclays going up against BCG. So Barclays is a bit of a dark horse here, but it's going to be fascinating to see how this all kind of plays out. Obviously, the results are really based on everyone voting on the site, and I believe that the final four are not going to be unveiled until Wednesday of this week. So you still have time to vote if you really feel strongly about Bain versus Apple or Barclays versus BCG, you know, Amazon versus Google. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. A lot of fun, and I'm not gonna predict, but it should be interesting.
Now, super interesting, and quite frankly, and I this is an off the cuff remark, but Goldman Sachs has been getting bad press in this country lately for their making their analysts work 95 or 100 hours a week.
So maybe that's why.
Maybe some of those folks have been voting them out.
Yeah, although I got to say, Facebook hasn't exactly been the media starlet either. And so that's why those two, they literally went like 50-50. And you know, Facebook just barely passed in. So I expect McKinsey will beat Facebook, but we shall see. The one I'm watching very carefully is Amazon up against Google. That'll be really fascinating to see what happens there. But that's happening over on the website, so check it out. Other than that, Alex, I'm ready to get into our candidates for this week if you are.
Yep, let's kick on.
All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this first candidate is applying to 8 business schools. This is an ApplyWire entry, and the person indicated Berkeley, Cornell, Dartmouth, Fuqua, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, and Darden as targets. They're not going to start school until the fall of 2022, so this is kind of an early bird. They've been working as a supply chain manager, and they want to pivot over into consulting or maybe tech after business school. They've got companies like Bain, Booz Allen, BCG, McKinsey on the radar, so it seems like consulting is kind of leading the way in terms of their goals. GMAT score is a 700, GPA 3.2, and they have 4 years of work experience. They're located in Brazil, and they want to land in the U.S. after business school. So, Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because for me, one of the things that jumps out is, are the numbers strong enough? But, you know, they're applying from Brazil. They did offer some additional insights on their profile and the notes about, you know, attending a really good school there. So what's your take on this candidate?
Yeah, this is a really interesting case, I think, because if you just look at the numbers on the surface, like 700 GMAT, 3.2 GPA, and no sort of extracurricular sort of volunteer work type stuff, as far as I could tell, I think that's what they said. You're starting to think, well, you know what, maybe they're aiming a little bit high. It's going to be a little tricky for them, but they're coming from Latin America. We know there's not the same testing culture in Latin America as there are in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So actually, that 700 GMAT's probably not too shabby coming out of that region. And the 3.2 GPA, that's actually a top third. They finished top 30 of their class, a top 30%. So maybe that GPA, again, doesn't have the same sort of level of grade inflation as perhaps GPAs do in the U.S., and this sort of, they've obviously been very successful at work, or it appears that they've had high level of sort of progress at work. So you can look at that progression and trending. That's very good, as well as impact at work. So as you start piecing all this stuff together and so forth, and one of the reasons why I wanted to select this candidate is, you know, people from different parts of the world, different cultural contexts, you know, the lens is a little bit different in terms of how ACOM is going to look at them.
Right.
I reckon, actually, this is a pretty strong candidate. If they really execute well on their applications, and if they really truly do have that very good, progressive, impactful set of work experience that's really well backed up by their recommenders. That's basically my summary in a nutshell. And they suggested that maybe, because MIT's on the list, maybe that's a reach a bit too far for them. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Include the reach, because you just don't know.
Yeah. One thing that struck me is if you pull, you know, Kellogg and MIT off the list, all the others are right in the same kind of domain, pretty much. They're all part of that kind of, you know, next 7 schools or whatever that make up the top 16 after the M7, or, you know, it's sort of in that ballpark, right? So I agree with you. I could not agree more that 700 out of Brazil might be okay. The 3.2 as well, given that they're, you know, in the top third of their class and that they went to the number one ranked university in Latin America, apparently. And I feel like there's a chance, and that they should apply to, you know, at least one M7, maybe two, and spread things around. I also was drawn to the fact that they mentioned that they've been working as a supply chain manager leading up to 90 employees. I mean, that is not something you see every day in the applicant pool in terms of, you know, having people that you're managing. I mean, you know, often you hear about the McKinsey person who's like, oh, I had to manage a couple of, you know, junior staff on a project or something. Like, it's nothing like that. So I like this candidate. I think they, you know, maybe don't want to apply to so many schools. And I think, you know, I would pick sort of like maybe five or six and keep the focus for round one, try to get them in early and yeah, go after a couple of top schools. My one question for you is, do they have a true safety on this list? Or are you concerned that maybe they need to add, you know, something a little further afield too, in order to be assured of getting in somewhere? Or would you just have them wait and go hard round one and see what comes back?
I think go into round one, and I don't think there's any, there shouldn't be necessary to have schools in the next tier down at this point. And certainly with a candidate like this, if they apply in round one or round two, I don't think they're going to be discriminated against in round two in terms of coming from an overpopulated applicant pool. So let's say they did apply in round one and they did blank and they do need a safety. I think they can apply to those safeties in round two if they need them. I don't think they will, quite frankly,
yeah.
Graham. I think the top 16 caliber programs that they've selected should be well within their reach. And I further encourage them to focus a little bit more on that M7 category.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I think, like you say, managing a lot of people like that, that's pretty impressive. I don't know if I could handle that. Not that I'm applying to top business schools either. So
no.
Yeah, it's but it is impressive.
Yeah.
The work experience clearly for me stands out for this candidate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alex, you've become an expert at managing yourself over the years, at least. I mean, there's something to be said for that.
That's a challenge.
All right. So I do want to thank that person for submitting that entry. Very interesting to talk about, because I particularly agree with your decision there in the sense of, like, let's talk about how candidates from the Latin American market are assessed when it comes to standardized testing and stuff. So that's important to include. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received. And this candidate is actually applying right now and hoping to start in the fall. And they have applied to Cambridge, ESADE, HEC, IE Business School, IESE, London Business School, and Oxford. Kind of a virtual who's who of leading MBA programs in Europe. They've been working in aerospace and defense up to date, and they want to sort of head post-MBA. They would love to get in, you know, go back to auto aerospace, somewhere in that domain. They indicate Airbus as a potential landing point in terms of a target employer. The GMAT score is a 700, GPA 3.4. They have 6 years of work experience. They're located in the U.S. and they want to land in Europe. And they mention in the note that they have 6 years of progressive leadership experience in aerospace and aviation, and that they want to get into business development in aviation in Europe post-MBA. So what do you make of this candidate? It's not every day that you see someone in the U.S. targeting exclusively European schools and wanting to kind of stay in Europe. And I don't know if we know. Do you know if this person is American or not? I kind of am assuming, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't know that we know that. But like you say, this is quite unusual, right? A female candidate, I think I read that, or they're involved in women in leadership, so I'm making that assumption. Applying for European MBA programs to want to then work in Europe and so on and so forth. And then on top of that, manufacturing, auto, aerospace is, you know, their industry in that, which I think is brilliant because it's completely off the beaten track. Well, not completely off the beaten track, but it's a little bit different again. And certainly, again, with the global pandemic, I got to imagine those industries have been completely upended. So there's going to be a lot of change, a lot of dynamism and various other things going on in those spaces. So I'm really liking all this.
Yeah.
I think these European ADCOM folks will like this candidate, wanting to come from the US to them and so on and so forth. That's probably a strength for them. Quite honestly, Graham, again, when you first look at the 700 GMAT, you're getting a little bit queasy. Maybe the European top European schools are a little less focused on the elite GMAT scores than their US counterparts. So there's a bit of grace there.
Yeah.
Again, I think from a work experience standpoint, this candidate stands out. So lots to like here in my book, Graham. I think they've applied. They should be getting interview invite decisions momentarily. They're still going to apply to judge. I don't think necessarily applying a little bit later is going to overly harm them because, again, they're not from an overly represented population.
Yeah, agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's obviously never great to apply late, but I think that you're right in that, first of all, the aerospace and defense industry is not overrepresented in the pool. And I can count on one hand the number of women that I've seen coming out of that sector that we've kind of reviewed or even that I've seen on our website. So I think, you know, she's going to tick some boxes and be unique in that respect. I agree, you know, the test score, probably not a big deal. 700 is a great score, and it's within spitting distance at all these schools on her list. I feel like there's a lot to like here. I guess I just wondered, you know, will the admissions folks on the other side of this wonder about her ability to stay in Europe? And I, you know, some of that's going to come down to how kind of planned out things are for her and whether or not, you know, I would encourage this candidate to think long and hard about a sort of plan B so that if you're ever interviewing at a business school and they say, look, you know, we see you want to work for Airbus in Europe. Great. A lot of our candidates are able to stay and work and get the appropriate working papers. But if you have to go back, what's your plan? You know, so I think you need to be ready to answer that because sometimes admissions officers get a little queasy when they see a candidate who it's like, if I can't stay in Europe, they have no plan, you know, beyond like trying to stay. So that's just something to keep in mind. I also wonder if this person has thought about whether they're going to be in the U.S. ever again. And if they are, then, you know, that plays into like which of these schools might rise to the surface, if assuming they get into all of them or something. So, you know, just investigating the strength of network. Obviously, Airbus, I feel like, has major offices in France. And so, you know, that could play well with HEC. I noticed INSEAD is not on the list here. I'm not sure why. And maybe this candidate thought that their numbers weren't high enough, but I wouldn't have ruled it out. It could also just be timing with the rounds and things. But anyway, interesting candidate. I think she's going to get several offers, even though it is late in the game. I feel like there's still going to be room for a candidate like this.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so let's move on. Thanks to that person for submitting. Always love to hear these kind of diverse profiles and stuff. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a MBA Decision Wire entry that we received. The candidate applied to Stern, UCLA, USC, and Yale. They were admitted to NYU and USC. And it sounds like they're waitlisted. They're assuming they're either waitlisted or rejected at UCLA and Yale. So let's assume that they just have these offers from Stern and USC. They're going to start school this coming fall. They want to get into nonprofit or social impact after business school. The GRE score was a 322, the GPA a 3.9. And in their note, they said they are super pumped to be accepted to two great programs and that they're kind of assuming they're not in at the other two just based on the timing and stuff. They're interested in entering the entertainment industry post-MBA. They love Stern's global opportunities and specializations, but USC has a larger percentage placement at entertainment companies. Any advice is appreciated. Also, received no scholarship. Can I negotiate this? Is their question. I'm a little confused, Alex, and I want to get your take because they indicate a post-MBA career plan of like nonprofit social impact, but it seems like maybe they're trying to get into that or do that work via the media and entertainment space. So I'm not clear on that piece, but anyway, there's a lot to discuss here. So what do you make of this candidate's dilemma?
Yeah, I mean, the way I read it, they're actually interested in the entertainment industry primarily. That's their principal goal. And sort of nonprofit social impact is a secondary goal, whether it's through their principal goal or as an alternative if their principal goal doesn't materialize. So there's actually the reason why I picked this one is there's a really good conversation on decision why as a result of this entry. And it's sort of a really good reflection, I think, of the quality of the community that develops there. Certainly this time of year as candidates sort of help each other think through their decision making. So on the one hand, there's a lot of sort of votes in terms of the community for actually picking Marshall USC over Stern. And the principal reason for that was that the thought that the closer you are to LA, the better, especially if you're targeting the film industry.
Right.
So if they're targeting the entertainment industry and if they're particularly interested in film, then the general consensus was you've got to go to USC in this case. But then it was revealed actually it's the music industry that they're more particularly keen on. So that sort of makes the geography, whether it should be New York or LA, a little bit less sort of solely focused, I guess, on LA and so forth. So lots of debate back and forth. Even when it was revealed it's music industry, there was still some folks weighing in on the LA aspect versus the New York aspect, and so on and so forth. But certainly, I think this is a really good example of making sure when you know your goals, you've got a particular industry you're particularly interested in, you've really got to examine how each of the schools, in terms of your options, is networked to those particular industries. And especially in the sort of media and entertainment industry, it's very sort of network-based, geography-based, and so on and so forth. So some really interesting conversations out there. I think if it was Anderson versus Stern, I'd say absolutely these programs are generally at par in the same tier. So really push for which is better in the better geography. USC versus Stern, I would argue that Stern's actually in a higher tier than USC more generally. But then again, when you really boil it down to your particular industry and interests and so on and so forth, then certainly USC Marshall becomes a bigger player in that conversation.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's basically my waffle take.
I mean, it is amazing how many comments there were on this post, and I think that the this person who's making the decision got a lot out of that, which is that's why we built Decision Wire. I mean, obviously, you and I don't have time to answer everybody's questions and be the only experts, and it's great to hear from like actual students and candidates making the same types of decisions or who have made those decisions. My view on this is, I know that this person was asked and they said, oh, I'd love to work in either city or even both cities, like to sort of be, going back and forth between LA and New York post-MBA. I still feel like I'll just echo what you said. Like, I think that NYU is definitely in a kind of tier above. Many would argue that they're sort of in this special group with, I think you've kind of argued this, that they're sort of in a group with maybe Haas and Tuck and Yale that's sort of right on the cusp of, the M7. It's like that next batch down. Obviously, the thing that's interesting is that USC has been making a major charge. I mean, they just sort of came from out of nowhere and have sort of vaulted themselves into the top, 15 in some of the rankings that you see now. And, they've been doing that because I think a lot of, as we know, geography matters. And jobs are, there are a lot of jobs in LA in this domain. And, it feels like, America's number one export these days is media and entertainment, right? And so that industry has just absolutely exploded with, platforms and things. So I understand where the kind of push for USC is coming from. I guess for me, I would do the due diligence and talk with some alums that are in the music industry from both programs and see what I hear on the ground. Because, that could be useful. I would have to be pretty overwhelmed, in one way or the other, like in terms of like everyone I talk to from USC is just saying, oh, absolutely, there are a million jobs out here for this and that exactly what you want to do, in order to have it kind of somehow, leap in front of NYU, especially since there's no money on the table in either instance. What did you think about that, by the way, the whole money thing? Can one ask for scholarship even if none has been offered?
Yeah, I think it's very hard if you don't have an offer to sort of weigh it against. Mm-hmm. And I think you're basically saying Stern over Marshall.
A little bit.
If I could summarize that. And obviously, Graham, you're from the music industry, so you do have that insight. Even though you chose to go to Wharton and chose a career outside of the industry in which you did participate. So, very good.
Yeah, I chose the don't make your passion your job kind of thing, this idea, which, you know, may or may not have been the right choice. I don't know. But I ended up discovering a new passion with higher ed. So, but in any event, yeah, this is a tough dilemma. I kind of lean NYU, but that's my point of view. And I really welcome all that conversation that took place on the site. Super useful. Alex, we've done it again. I know you've got to run somewhere, so we've just gotten in under the wire in terms of getting you off to your next meeting. But thanks for picking out these, you know, Wiretaps posts as always. And yeah, everyone, thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and review this podcast and tell at least one friend that you love the show so that we can get other people listening as well. Thanks again, Alex, and I guess we'll see you in 1 week's time.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham. Stay safe, everyone. Good luck.